everyone, to the College Sports Briefing, your in-depth look at the business, legal, and social issues impacting college athletics today. I'm Daniel Hare, and on today's podcast, we're going to talk about the new lawsuit recently brought against the NCAA regarding its rules capping scholarship amounts. We'll also discuss some comments made by NCAA President Mark Emmert earlier in the month, as well as in a roundtable discussion just this morning on NBC's Meet the Press. Finally, we'll close with a minute each or so on a number of different topics and issues that are going on in the news today. And so we've got a lot to get to on this Sunday, March 23rd. I'm very glad you're here, and let's get right into it. A new lawsuit was filed within the last week against the NCAA, and it is in some ways in line with the O'Bannon litigation that's been going on, as well as a couple of other cases against the NCAA, all kind of, in the past at least, all kind of nipping around the edge of the amateurism debate and whether or not student-athletes should be compensated above and beyond what is currently allowed within the NCAA rules, which is basically a scholarship covering their cost of attendance at their institutions. And so what's notable about the most recent lawsuit is that it's the first one that's been filed to actually target the scholarship in the sense of compensation for work being done by the student athletes. And maybe a better way to phrase it is the O'Bannon case is limited or has been limited to their use of the player's likeness or image in things such as video games and television broadcasts, whereas this lawsuit is attacking the actual rule in the rule book that limits what schools can provide student athletes in regards to a scholarship, and calling that rule a violation of antitrust laws. And basically, what we have is, and I think what you'll see from the NCAA is that, yes, it is a restraint of trade, which is kind of the term of art used to talk about the capping of scholarships, that yes, the rule is agreed to by the universities to cap compensation or awards for student athletes at those levels. And in many industries, most industries, that would sort of almost automatically be an antitrust violation. Competitors within, say, telecom, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and so forth, can't get together and decide we're going to price telephones at this, or they can't get together and say we're going to cap employee wages at this. That's a restraint of trade that's forbidden under federal law. And the NCAA, for as long as it's been awarding scholarships and even before that, has always defended this rule under the guise or under the reasoning of, it's necessary under their amateurism principles and to preserve what college athletics is. Essentially, the case that they've made is that to allow student athletes to essentially become professionalized would put college athletics in competition with professional athletics, and essentially would be professional athletics, which would not be good for the game of college athletics. And so in order for college athletics to survive, it has to be different. It has to be independent of professional athletics. And therefore, it is in the college athletics industry or world's best interest in terms of survival for athletes to not be paid, to be limited to scholarships, and that's what's called a pro-competitive impact or effect of that rule. And that's sort of a defense you have to amateurism rules. You can cap certain things if it's necessary for, or if it's has pro-competitive benefits that outweigh the negatives. What is interesting about this case that's most recently been filed as well is that it matches exactly the class certification parameters that were recently set by the judge in the O'Bannon case. So if you remember, the O'Bannon litigation within the last few months went to the judge. The judge made a ruling about whether the group of plaintiffs could be certified as a class. And basically what she said was that they could be with regard to seeking the injunction and sort of any future damages or awards. But with regards to any prior awards, they couldn't be. And so what that meant was that anyone who's a former athlete, such as Ed O'Bannon, he's not going to be able to get a bunch of former athletes together and recover damages from what's happened over the past decades in terms of revenue that hasn't gotten to the student athletes, if indeed a jury or a judge were to find that that violated the law. And so now the way that Ed O'Bannon or other former student athletes could recover damages is to simply bring their own claim. Then they could bring their own lawsuit. And so that's kind of where that was left. But they could form a class. Every plaintiff could be together with regards to pursuing the injunction and any future relief. And so what we saw with this most recent lawsuit is they are seeking a class that exactly matches that. They're not looking for any past damages. They have right now, actually, only current student athletes, and then also any student athletes who will, any people who become student athletes between now and the end of the litigation in football and basketball. And they're looking for injunctive relief to prevent this rule from continuing forward, to allow basically a free market within the scholarship system. And so I think that's the biggest distinction and difference. This suit is not pursuing likeness or image use issues. That's the O'Bannon case. So this case is different. Now, there is a chance that at some point the cases could become consolidated. They could be litigated within the same case if the judges get together and decide that's the direction they'd like to go. But as far down the road as the O'Bannon litigation is, I don't know if that's a real possibility or not. I mean, this suit was just filed this week. The O'Bannon litigation was filed in 2009. And so, there's been obviously 5 years worth of pretrial motions and discovery and depositions and all of the pretrial things that go on, and none of which has happened specifically to this most recent case. And so, assuming they stay apart, we'll have, obviously some type of resolution in the O'Bannon case at some point, and then this one will still be going along. Now, also something I think that's worth noting, I didn't read anywhere in the complaint or in the lawsuit that was filed that would reclassify student athletes as employees. And that's obviously something that's going on in the Northwestern situation, where they are trying to pursue getting student athletes employee status under the National Labor Relations Act. And I didn't see anything in the complaint of this most recent lawsuit to move that direction. And so the way it sort of reads to me is all that this lawsuit is trying to do is to get the rule thrown out of capping scholarships. And I think my understanding from reading it is that if they were simply to remove that rule and schools were free to provide whatever scholarship assistance they wanted to for each athlete, whether it be $100 or $200,000 or $1 million, call it a scholarship. And we're not moving into employee-employer world. We're just calling this scholarship, $100,000 or $10,000 or whatever. And so that's an interesting distinction when we get to talking about NCAA President Mark Emmert's comments a little bit later, where he focuses a lot on the employee issue, because if this suit were to go forward, it doesn't appear to me that the employee-employer issue would be a part of it, that it would simply be a matter of scholarships going to being uncapped. And so student athletes could receive whatever scholarship amount a school decided. And so that is where this is going. Another couple of tidbits about this lawsuit is that it was filed by an attorney named Jeffrey Kessler, who is very well known and well regarded, very, very prominent lawyer, particularly in this area, this field. He's been involved in professional free agency and getting that done in the 80s and 90s. And so this is something that, you know, when he's involved in a matter like this, it certainly, I think, ups the ante and, you know, really adds a lot of credibility to it. And then finally, the last thing I was going to mention is that I was listening to a commentary from Judge Andrew Napolitano about this case. He's a frequent contributor on Fox News. But his piece was talking about how, you know, on its face, if you just read the arguments made by the plaintiffs, then it's pretty obvious that this is an antitrust violation. And what he was saying is, look, this is really not even so much a question of law. It's more a question of, you know, what as a society do we want in regards to college athletes? And if we want them to remain in this state of, you know, not professionalized, not compensated as employees, not provided, you know, more than a scholarship, then really what Congress needs to do is pass an antitrust exemption for the NCAA and for its schools, similar to what Major League Baseball has, which would take all of these cases off the table. And so, and he focused on how, you know, does a judge want to be the person who sort of changes how college sports is conducted going forward with just, you know, one person's decision. And I thought that was interesting because I have a little bit different take on it. You know, if it's obvious that this case is one in which there's obvious antitrust issues and it's violating the law, and we have a decision to make as a culture, as a society, about whether we want to keep it this way, then it seems to me that the obvious thing to do is for the judge to rule under what the law currently is. And if the law currently is, hey, this is obviously antitrust violations, then that's what the judge should do. And that's the way the system works, is that the judge should rule that way. And then if the society, if our citizens and Congress and everybody want to get together and say, you know what, the judge was right, that's the way the law is written and the way it should be applied, and, you know, we're not comfortable with that result, and so we need to adjust the laws so that colleges and universities and the NCAA and student athletes can maintain the relationship they have right now, and we don't move any further forward in terms of the professionalism. And so I was a little bit surprised to hear Judge Napolitano talk about how you know, a federal judge wouldn't want to be the person to change everything. But if that's the correct application of the law, that's precisely what the judge should do, and that's precisely the judge's role, and then it's precisely our role as citizens and Congress's job in response to our desires to change the law, if that's what we need to do. And so I just have a completely different take from him on that. But I do agree that an antitrust exemption for the NCAA is probably something that will get discussed at some point, particularly if one of these judges rules against the NCAA. And so from that standpoint, I think he has a very good point. Okay, so that's where we are with that lawsuit, and it's going to be something to really pay attention to as we move forward. The next topic that I wanted to discuss, I kind of had on the agenda from a comment that NCAA President Mark Emmert made about a week and a half ago or so, since we last recorded, where he talked about that the idea of paying student athletes was quote-unquote silly. And, you know, I read comments like that, and he's made similar comments in the past. And, you know, something that really bothers me, I actually think that there are valid arguments on both sides of these issues, and I think there's very well-meaning people on both sides of these issues. And I think when the principals, such as Mark Emmert, use phrases like silly when describing the other side's position, I think it really brings down the level of discourse, and it's really disappointing. You know, it's not silly. You know, in fact, what they're doing could very well be illegal, and what the players could very well be advocating could be righting a wrong and an injustice that's gone on for decades. And, you know, and they're also the ones who are being financially, potentially financially harmed by this. They are physically becoming harmed by this in the way of injuries and concussions and so forth, something the NCAA has also said that they're not responsible for, which is just a complete joke. And so, and again, I think there are arguments on either side, and there's ways to approach these issues on either side that could result in compromise and a better way forward. But I just, it really troubles me when President Emmert or others on either side, frankly, but when they use terms like silly, or they really sort of just put down the other side, almost, you know, to the point of making it sound like this is a distraction, a joke, and it's not worth anyone's time. And that's kind of the way that comes across. And I just think it's completely wrong. And then the other comment that he made, and I've heard this term used a number of times, and it's really concerning to me, is he's used the phrase, you know, we don't want to convert student athletes to employees. And to me, the issue isn't whether or not to convert student athletes to employees. The question is, have these student athletes always been employees? And should we start recognizing them for what they are? Because that's what this is all about. You know, it's not about converting them. If, you know, we see some of the same issues with regards to when someone's an independent contractor and they have contracts with various companies, or more specifically, when they have contracts with maybe just one company or two companies. And, you know, there's a lot of implications within tax law, within other areas of the law, where if you're an independent contractor, you get treated very differently than if you're an employee of the company that you're contracting with. But a lot of times, independent contractors have very exclusive deals with big customers that they contract with. And so there's often a test that is applied to determine, is this person really an independent contractor? Are they really, you know, on their own, conducting their own business? And or are they really, they may say they're an independent contractor, but are they really an employee of ABC Inc., the big company that they do pretty much all their work for, that they follow all of their procedures, that they, you know, are subject to all of their rules? And, you know, so that's a big distinction. And, you know, it's not about whether do we convert them to an employee, or do we convert them to an independent contractor? It's simply, what are they? You know, and so I think the similar analysis applies here. You know, if in fact they were converted to employees, I think it was probably done a long, long time ago. There was a point at which there was some conversion. And so, you know, but I think the question today isn't so much, you know, do we want to convert them to student athletes? Is, as things stand today, as the relationship stands today, are they employees? Or are they not? And, you know, then we can certainly have a conversation about whether, you know, if things continue to move in a direction of professionalizing, and we decide that they're not employees today, do we want to move in that direction of making them employees tomorrow or 10 years from now? That's certainly a fair discussion. But for everything that's going on right now today, and for these cases that are being litigated, and for the Northwestern student athletes that are trying to, you know, file for union status, you know, that's all about, are they employees today? And have we just not been calling them that? Have we not been treating them like that, you know, in every way that we should have been, when in fact they basically have been employees in the way that they've been acting? And so I think that's a term that he uses quite a bit that I'm not, you know, a fan of. And then lastly is, you know, he'll quote things such as, or he'll say things such as, you know, everyone that I've talked with in and around intercollegiate athletics, nobody wants to convert them to student athletes, or convert them to employees. Nobody wants to pay them. Well, again, you know, how much should we even take that into consideration? I mean, we know when he says that, he's talking to university presidents, he's talking to athletic directors, he's talking to people within, you know, networks, probably all people who are currently benefiting from the system as it stands today, and who would also stand to lose some money if it were to be scraped away from them and funneled into some fund for student athletes or into scholarships for student athletes that isn't done now. And so I think it's a little disingenuous. You know, who is he surrounding himself with? If he sat in a room of the Student Athlete Advisory Council members, of which there's a bunch of them, but we heard from a couple of them at the Division I talks that were held in January, you know, they're not going to say that, you know, so I question the feedback he's getting from, you know, constituents. He's not, I don't believe, at least not talking about what feedback he's getting from all constituents. He's limiting, you know, what his public comments are to just what he's hearing from, you know, like I said, those presidents and administrators and TV executives who currently stand to only lose from any change in the current system. And so I just, you know, there's sort of a tone deafness that's going on here and a smugness that's going on here that, you know, it's bothersome. And he's into his credit, he's been trying to get the stipend deal passed for a while. He didn't have any luck with that because of all of the smaller Division I schools who voted that down a couple of times. And, you know, and so it's not that he's going the wrong way on everything. It's just some of these comments just are troublesome. And, you know, I don't think are reflective of what someone in his position of leadership should be saying. So that's President Emmert earlier in the month, about a couple weeks ago. Then he was also on Meet the Press this morning. And so if you haven't had a chance to go online, if you didn't see it or you didn't have a chance to catch it, go, you know, online and you can either watch it or read the transcript. It was a round table that the host David Gregory had with President Emmert, with Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education, who is also a former student athlete, as well as Reggie Love, who, as you may know, was a basketball player at Duke and then also served as President Obama's special assistant and then has moved on since then. But certainly a good panel to and discuss this these particular issues, all the things that we've been talking about today and in previous podcasts and blog posts. And so it was a very, I think, interesting dialogue. I'm glad that they had it. I hope that people listen to it, watch it, read the transcript, because it really, I think, brought several things to light. One, just it did continue some of the things that we've been talking about with Mark Emmert. Secretary Duncan, I thought, really had a positive contribution in the sense that his area of focus was, look, you know, no matter how we move forward on all these lawsuits and these issues, there's no question that in the student athlete model, there is too much emphasis on the winning factor as opposed to in terms of winning on the field, as opposed to graduating the student athletes. And so his big complaint, he came back to it at the end of the segment. He led with it at the first of the segment, so you could tell it was really his big piece that he wanted to get out there, was that athletic directors, presidents have to start changing the way they structure their incentives for coaches. That right now the ratio of dollars in terms of incentives for athletic performance versus academic performance are so out of whack that there's no question that the message that coaches are getting from their bosses are that the most important thing is to win and everything else is a way distant second. And if you see the way coaches are hired and fired, there is no doubt that that's absolutely the case. And so while I admire Secretary Duncan's comments and I think they have absolute validity, you know, the struggle with it is who's going to be the first one to do that and who's going to be the first one to start taking losses, start having losing programs for the sake of, you know, full graduating classes of student athletes. And that's really the question. And until there's some type of mandate, until there's some type of system that everyone's playing under, you know, if you leave it up to individual schools, you're just not going to see that. There's too much money involved in winning. specifically from alumni and donor bases who aren't going to be tolerant of that. You know, they're going to, in fact, I mean, even if the, you know, new rules are put in or whatever in terms of academic requirements or incentives, still the pressure is going to be there to win. And it's going to be, look, I don't care what you're having to deal with in terms of academics, you got to get that done and you also got to win. That's always the way it is. And so, you know, I don't know how that plays out practically. Anyway, I thought it was a good panel discussion this morning. It's mostly the same from President Emmert, you know, Reggie Love certainly brought a player's perspective. And so I think there was a very good discussion, one that I would recommend you going and watching or listening to or reading. And then lastly, we're going to kind of buzz through a number of topics here that have come up within the last week that I thought all were sort of interesting, all I wanted to sort of point you in the direction of, not going to in depth today. But I was reading an article from IMG College, their president, who IMG College is the company which... it's a monster company, but in respect to what they do within college athletics, it's that they manage and control a lot of the sponsorship sales that go on in college athletic departments, which have been outsourced over the years to them. And so basically when you go into the arena and you see signage or you listen to a broadcast on the radio and you hear commercials, IMG College has paid for the rights to those sponsorship that sponsorship inventory, and then they go out and sell it. And so that's what they do for a number of the high profile institutions. And one of the things that this president was being interviewed and profiled, this the IMG College president. But the thing that really stood out to me that I just had to laugh was he blamed the growth in expenses of college athletics on Title IX and the spending on women's sports. And you know, I literally laughed out loud when I read it. I kind of thinking it was a joke, and it certainly wasn't a joke. At least from him, it I think was be a joke to most people who read it. At least it was a joke to me. Very out of touch comment. I thought uneducated comment. I think just simply no truth to that comment. And so, I think there's a lot of problems with Title IX. I'm not a, I think it has absolute value, but I think there's also issues with it. To make a comment like that and to blame all of the expenses of, or the increase in costs on, Title IX in this day and age, with what is being paid to high-profile coaches as well as put into facilities, I just think is unbelievable. But another one, you may have seen this, that the Baylor University basketball team was wanting to wear kind of a new type of jersey in the postseason in the Big 12 tournament, in the NCAA tournament, with the name Sic'em Bears on their jersey instead of Baylor Bears or just Bears or just Baylor. Sic'em Bears is the little tagline and quote that all the fans use. And they were not allowed to do that. NCAA said, you can only put down your, you can only put on your uniforms your official school name or school nickname. Anything else is not allowed. And so I actually suggested that Baylor ought to change their official school nickname for the month of March to Sic'em Bears so that they could keep those jerseys. But it didn't work out that way. And then lastly, the other thing, the Knight Commission had a meeting this month. They're a group of folks that really look at the academic and student athlete welfare side of college athletics, make recommendations and so forth. They had a meeting this month, and it was very interesting reading. They had a Twitter feed that I would encourage you to go back and find and go through that. They're live tweeting a lot of the comments that were being made. There was some good stuff there. And one thing that I kept hearing over and over, though, and maybe they went into more detail in the actual meeting and I just wasn't picking it up on the tweets, you know, there's a lot of citing student athlete welfare or student athlete interest or student athlete best interest as reasons to do or not to do something, but there's rarely any thing backing that up as to why. You know, we can't pay them or we can pay them, and either way, it's in the student athlete's best interest. And then you just don't ever hear the why. And I think we've got to still start holding people accountable to following up those sort of generic terms like student athlete welfare and student athlete interest with the question why, and make them state reasons A, B, and C. Why is it in their best interest, or why isn't it in their best interest? And until, you know, we do that, we're, I think, leaving a lot on the table in terms of some of these discussions that are really important. So anyway, that is everything that I think I wanted to cover today. There was a lot going on the last few weeks. Obviously, the NCAA tournament is in full swing right now, and it's exciting. I think the number of overtime games in the first weekend that we've had in a long, long time. And it's just, for all the things that we talk about here and all of the kind of behind the scenes business and legal issues, really this weekend and this month is, for me at least, what it's all about, and the fun and the pageantry and the passion of the NCAA tournament. So I hope you enjoy it. That's all the time we have for this episode. I encourage you to go to the blog collegesportsbriefs.com for show notes and links to the things we talked about, as well as other articles on college sports law and business. The podcast is now in all of the major directories, including iTunes. So I'd love for you to go find the show there, leave a review. That really helps the podcast get ranked and moved up so that more people can find it. Subscribe there as well. You can go to collegesportsbriefs.com/iTunes. And finally, you can check out the Facebook page, facebook.com/collegesportsbriefs. And you can follow me on Twitter at Daniel Hare. And I thank you so much for listening and for being here today. And I hope you enjoyed this edition of the College Sports Briefing.